Welcome to Raw Mind Sports, where we dig into the minds of athletes and sports fanatics. I'm your host, Ryan Primetime Jones. If you have a love and passion for sports, then this is the show for you.
Yeah, my main guy, one of the guys who pretty much raised me when I was a kid, and also is a great role model to me and the future successes and my past successes, is Coach Jenkins. He was also my coach, was an amazing teacher, phenomenal guy. And we're here today to talk about his accolades in sports. Each sport he played in as well as he coached. So, Coach Jenkins, let's talk about, LeSean Jenkins to some people, but Coach Jenkins always me, no matter the age. LeSean Jenkins, let's talk about your childhood before you became this great athlete and great coach.
My childhood. Well, first of all, I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to be on your show. I think it's kind of honorable to kind of see you as my former player, like somebody who directly was part of my system to be doing so well. So good job. I'm really proud of you.
Thanks.
But as far as my childhood, I mean, I grew up on the south end of Edgecombe County, what we call Pine Tops, known for the two stoplights, known for the Abrams on the corner, and known for the tractor pull every May. So growing up in Pine Tops, obviously, not much has changed. That was a long time ago. But growing up in Pine Tops, you know, did two things to me. It made me realize that the shortcomings and the disadvantages that rural communities face, especially high poverty areas. But it also made me aspire to be more. It made me realize that I did not want to necessarily live in Pine Tops for the rest of my life. And if I did live in Pine Tops, it was because I came back to live in Pine Tops just to kind of be that agent of change. And so growing up, I mean, I'd like to think that I had a regular childhood. And I said that for a long time. But obviously, you know, like facing all the things that come along with low socioeconomics, you know, poverty, you know, the ripple effect of poverty, single parent household, you know, so childhood was challenging, but it didn't break me. It made me. And so had it not been for the childhood that I had at that time, I don't know if I would be sitting here, because it humbled me and it made me hungry for success. It made me hungry to want to be somebody. And it also made me hungry to want to impact the lives of other people.
So, Coach Jenkins, let's talk about your career at Southwest, the high school you went to in Pine Tops, and as well as at ECU, playing at the D1 level.
Okay. So, you know, I was always very, very active in sports, and was always inspired by my sister. My sister was a few years older than me, actually 7 years older. And track was her thing. So I just always, from a young child, always had like a passion for running and just jumping and basketball and tag football and everything else. You know, but because of, honestly, just because of just the implications of poverty, like I didn't always play all the sports I wanted to play. You know, sometimes transportation was an issue, getting to and from practice, getting the right equipment. Which is one reason why I'm a firm believer in like really investing in kids, because it's a true story that some parents aren't financially able to invest in the opportunity for their children. So I missed out on opportunities because of just missing out on just the opportunities of like securing the things that I really needed. But having said that, you know, just at Southwest, I played soccer, was part of the inaugural season of they started a program at school, and I didn't do anything in the fall. Had ran cross country, but there was nothing exciting about running 3 miles at all. So I kind of transitioned from cross country to playing soccer in the fall. Never played basketball at Southwest, though I was part of the program. I was like a team manager, so I always had a passion for basketball. I always played outside of school. Always played, but just didn't play for school because, like I said, some of those restrictions that were in place because of like economic reasons. And then in the spring, like I probably since sixth grade, I had a real passion for tennis. I ended up playing tennis and did really well in high school, you know, really decorated. And of course, I had a chance to go on and play at East Carolina. So not sure about the history books, but I'm almost certain that there hasn't been another Division I college tennis player to come out of Southwest.
Hmm.
And so it makes me proud to kind of look back and just kind of see that, you know, I paved the way for not only for tennis players, but even for just minorities in the sport. So
amazing. I get it now. You played tennis, soccer, and then you played at that level. And you ran cross country. So with all those levels, I mean, with those sports, require you to be in a very top level shape. No wonder you ran so much back in the day. Yeah. I get it now. I get it.
Yeah, conditioning is crucial. And when I got to college, I mean, going from high school to East Carolina, man, there were plenty of days after practice that I questioned, like, is this really my dream? Like, do I really want to keep chasing this thing? And so I learned a lot of physical discipline as a college athlete. You know, I learned how to really push myself beyond my limits. And so what that did for me as a coach was it made me that way as a coach. It made me push kids beyond their physical, mental, emotional limits. And it made me establish a level of rigor for kids. Because, I mean, you don't get to D1 level just by being average. And you certainly don't get to D1 level just by being talented. Like, those are just two intangibles. You get to D1 level by being great in what you do and by working in your craft every single day. So it was a tough journey, but I got there.
Getting the best out of you, and you also got the best out of a lot of players. That defines you a lot. Also, since you was playing on the D1 level, I want to ask you this. What led you from going from athlete to coaching?
Well, so I always knew that I wanted to help kids holistically. So that means, like, I didn't want to just be a good teacher. I wanted to really help kids develop. And so since sports was always my passion, I mean, what better way to help kids realize their best potential by teaching them during the day and coaching them, like, after school? And so I knew that I had a passion and a gift for young people. And also, it was frustrating for me to see kids sell themselves short. So I got tired of seeing these kids with all this college potential but never really made it. And so I felt that as a former college athlete, I could at least expose them to a level of expectation, a level of training that could at least help them become believers in their own dream. Now, whether you make it or not, that's up to you. But a lot of kids weren't even believers in who they could be and what they could become. And so I felt that as a teacher and as a coach, those are two powerful positions in the lives of young people. And I just decided to kind of tap into those opportunities. So when I became a first year teacher, you know, some coaching opportunities came up. And by my second year, I was head coaching like two or three sports. And so that's kind of how that developed.
Man, amazing. And you helped build inner confidence in a lot of players who you say they kind of didn't believe, but you gave them that there's always believing and always giving 110%. If you believe in yourself, anything is possible.
Well, you make it sound so easy, but obviously you should know it was not easy to instill anything into players, because the first thing is the breaking phase. I had to break down so many guys, including you. I had to break down players first, because before you can pour anything into a person, you know, they need a good foundation. And that's not to discredit, like, what their parents had already instilled in them or what they already brought to the table. But my way of doing things was so specific and so precise that I knew in order for a player to be the level of player that I wanted him to be, that he had to possess a certain mentality. He almost had to be a small microcosm of who I was. I wanted my players to think like me and to compete like me and to have that level of toughness. And so, you know, this is probably not on the script, but I mean, just like when I remember one game, we went into Farmville. I was coaching JV. This was 2000 and this is the 2002-2003 season. You were not a starter on that team.
Right.
I sat a player because he made a D on his test. He passed the test, but that wasn't our standard. So I sat CJ Stokes. CJ, hey CJ, if you're watching this video, I sat our starting point guard. He was our second leading scorer. And I started you in his spot. And you had the best game of your career at that point. You came off the bench, knocked down 6 threes, dropped 18 points. And with our starting point guard on the bench, we were able to extend our win streak to 10 straight games. And so that's just an example of, like, instilling that belief system. You know what I'm saying? Like, most guys who don't start, they come off the bench and they're nervous and stuff. But you were ready for your moment, because that's the way I groomed you guys to be ready at that moment. And so, you know, when I think about stuff like that, I mean, that was 2003. Goodness, that was 15 years ago. But that stuff is still fresh in my mind, because it comes from, like, an authentic place. And so it just makes me proud to know that, like, I don't look back and see any of my players who I feel like I shortchanged them or I sold them short. If they're in college, it's because of what was instilled in them. If they're not in college, it's because they made the decision. It wasn't because they played for a guy that wasn't accountable fully for who they were and who they were to become. So,
well said. Well said. Okay, Coach Jenkins, what did you learn each year going to a new year of coaching? Because I'm pretty sure every team was kind of different. I know you probably had the same philosophy, but each team had different versions. So let's kind of dive into that.
Okay, so each season to me was like literally like a season. Like, so I didn't believe in like living in the past. So, I mean, every year was you start over from scratch. If we won a championship last year, then great. But that has nothing to do with this year. So every time it was exciting for me because like I'm a really big, most people don't know this, but like I really have a design mentality. So when it comes to like preparing your team and creating your roster, like that's a design, like designing like who are your guards, who are your post players, who are your forwards, what offense are you going to run that's going to be like conducive to bring out the best in this team. Even on the soccer field, it was the same way, like who am I going to play where, like what system are we going to put in place? And so I always got super excited about like the design piece of a team and like how to make sure like what team activities are we going to do? What team building activities are we going to do? What are the things that I'm going to do that's going to break these guys down? But what are the things are we going to do that I'm going to build these guys up? How far are we going to run? I'm sure you remember like we used to, people call it borderline crazy, but we used to remember we used to have like what we call team fun runs, right, where we just ran for fun. And I wasn't like on a bike, like watching you guys. I was leading the pack. I ran with you guys. And so that was always exciting every year. Because the good thing about new season is you don't know if the season's going to be the best season you ever had. It could be the worst season you ever had. Or it could be mediocre. So it was always exciting to me to go into a new season. It was a new beginning. It was a new opportunity for me to be a better coach, to be a better mentor, to be a better whatever I need to be for my players. And not only was that an opportunity for like player development, but it was also an opportunity for me just to be stronger, like in X's and O's and just defensive schemes or whatever we were going to do. It was just an opportunity to be better. So that's what I really liked about that.
And I remember when we used to do those fun runs, and most coaches don't usually run with their players. But to see you do it, then you were like, all right, don't let me beat y'all. And we'd be thinking like, yeah, it's going to be a piece of cake because, you know, he's a lot older. He's not going to be able to beat us. And just as soon as we get closer and closer to the building, you still ahead. We still are there panicking, hoping we we find a way to beat you. For you to be in that type of shape at that age, and even though you was a young coach, but still for us to see our coach running is like a whole different type of motivation with us. So he's doing it with us as well.
I do want to make one correction. I wasn't that much older than y'all.
I know.
I probably conducted myself like I was much older. So I was still in pretty good shape. I'm still in pretty good shape right now, you know. So, but I believe in modeling. So if you're going to ask your players to put out everything they got, they should at some point see you put out everything you got. And so they become believers not only in what you're telling them, but they become witnesses in what you're telling them. Because, I mean, some things seeing is believing. So some things players just have to see. So when I put 44 seconds on the clock and you got that, you just had a flashback.
Yeah.
If I put 44 seconds on the clock, I need you guys to know that not only am I making you do this 44, but that if I need to show you that it can be done, I can get on the baseline and run that down and back 8 times in 44 seconds just to show you it can be done. And now I expect you to do it.
I know. Oh, man. It gave me a very unique flashback. I remember one time we was running for like a whole hour. I don't know what happened in practice, but
that was trials.
Yeah.
You just run for 60 minutes. That was the weeding out process. That I needed to see who really wanted it and who didn't. So that was just weeding out process. So that hadn't even started practice yet. So guys, that's why you're tough today.
You know,
you've been through some stuff.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of your coaching accolades.
Okay, so let's see. So my first year coaching JV, we won the conference championship. So that was back in 2002, 2003. So my first year as a JV basketball coach, I was conference coach of the year, which was like really a big moment for me. You know, if you remember, you probably don't remember, but I do. We started the season off 0-2. We played Rocky Mount back-to-back. We lost both games. Here I was a new coach, young coach, and, you know, kids lose confidence in you real quick if you're not winning. And then we went on a We went on a 13-game win streak.
Win streak.
We went to North Pitt. Half the team had the flu. We lost a close one at North Pitt, and then we won out. So we ended up 15-3 conference championship. I was coach of the year that year in 2003. So that was 2002, 2003. That same year, I was coach of the year at Tarver High School. That same year, I was the conference coach of the year for soccer. So when you add up all those accolades, I'm really proud of what I was able to accomplish. So I was coach of the year at Tarver High School 3 times. I was the conference coach of the year for soccer 6 times. I was the regional soccer coach of the year 8 times. And I was the state coach of the year twice in 2014. And, of course, I coached the East-West All-Star game in 2013. I coached the state games, Power 8 state games in 2013 and 14. We won the state championship in 13, finished state runner-ups in 14. So I was the national soccer coach of the year for North Carolina for small public schools. And so, I mean, I've really accomplished a lot. But the thing that makes me most – the thing that I'm most proud of is, like, I've had – so I think 6 players have played in the East-West All-Star game, had a lot of players to make All-State, had a lot of players just simply to go to college, get degrees, and are now, like, taking care of their business. So, like, I got a lot of plaques at home, a lot of accolades, but the accolade that I'm most proud of is the fact that, of where my players are today. And so when I scroll through Facebook, I'm not shaking my head and depressed. Like, I'm really, like, proud of what my players are doing. And I think, to me, that's the most important accolade that you can have. Because not to turn this into a devotion or anything, but the Bible say, like, you can determine a tree by the fruit that they bear. And so I translate that as you can tell the quality of a coach based on what his players are doing and where his players are going. And so if players ain't going nowhere, if they're not doing anything, then you need to don't check the fruit, check the tree. And so I held myself to a pretty high standard as a coach.
I agree. I agree. Absolutely. You say you won a conference. With the JV team you had.
Yes.
Let's talk about that last game. That kind of brought me a thought right there. Do you remember that last game?
On JV that year?
Yeah, your first year coaching.
All right, so my first year coaching, let me go all the way back to my archives. So my first year coaching. If I'm not mistaken, that last game of the season, was that North Lenoir?
That was.
Okay,
that
so North Lenoir home. North Lenoir was one of those. So at North Lenoir, okay, got it. So North Lenoir, championship game, we won 69-66. It was a tight game. North Lenoir had a powerhouse basketball program. And so I remember it came down to a last play. The game was tied, and we had to draw up a full court press breaker. And somehow or another, it ran to perfection. And we ended up winning by 3, and we won the conference championship. And so that was exciting. That was thrilling. I forget about that game sometimes, but that was really thrilling, like, to see guys, like, really excited about winning, you know, so.
That's what I said, too. That game was always a real tough game. We always pretty much matched each other. Both teams had talent. Our team, Tarver, you know, had talent. And North Lenoir had a lot of talent, too. That was, like, one of the most interesting games out of the whole year. Even though we lost to Rocky Mount, it was like those games weren't no blowouts. But, you know, it still was the fact that wasn't even the most impressive one. It was just that North Lenoir playing for something to say, hey,
right,
we're winners.
But do you remember the North Lenoir home game where we went into the fourth quarter tied and we scored 37 points in the fourth quarter? Sean Drone, I don't know if you guys know that guy.
Sean
Drone scored 17 points in the fourth quarter, and we ended up beating North Lenoir by about 20 points. I mean, just some great time. But you can't play that way, and you can't play that way without discipline. We pressed the entire game. We pressed and we ran 42 the entire game. And so you guys were in shape, and it took a lot of discipline for you guys to really buy into the philosophy. So that was really exciting.
I agree. Those are the days. So let's talk about, you know, you coach basketball and you also coach soccer. Was it a different approach because of the two sports were different, or?
The only thing that was different was I would never wear a Tarver soccer t-shirt to a Tarver basketball practice. And I would never wear basketball stuff to a soccer practice because I wanted both programs to realize that they were different, but they both shared the same coach. So I didn't want to take away from the authenticity of the importance of basketball of our program, and I didn't want to take away from the importance of the soccer program. But you can best believe that standard of discipline and structure was blueprinted in both programs, which is why I think we experienced success at different levels and in different places. So I obviously it requires a different mentality because they're two different sports, But as far as my coaching philosophy and player expectation, it was no different. So if a basketball player walked in this room right now who played for me, which you're here, and if a soccer player came in here, you guys are going to have a pretty similar narrative of what it was like to play for me. So it's not one guy's not going to say, well, man, it was easy. Like, he was easy on us, but he was hard on y'all. No, it was the same expectation, same standard of excellence. Didn't care who your mama was, what your last name was, what your socioeconomic status was. We show up every day to be great, and we show up every day to build championship mentality and to win championships. And so that was always the standard of expectation for both programs.
Boy, the best of both worlds, soccer and basketball.
And they're actually pretty similar.
You know,
it's just one is with your feet, one's with your hands. You still play transition. You still counterattack. You still got to defend. Like, they had a lot in common. So I enjoyed designing the programs, like, in terms of the function and stuff.
I know a lot of you now since I've been seeing you late, looking at you on Facebook and stuff. You're giving a lot of motivational speeches or way of.
You on my Facebook?
Yeah. Okay. And kind of seeing, you know, you bring a different type of motivation to the world. So what, and my question to you right now is, what led you to being a motivational speaker or motivating so many people, not just your players, but in other areas of life to the world?
What led me to it? I'm not going to say anything led me to it. I think that this is who I was chosen to be in the world. As we sit here as African-American men, you didn't have a choice in that. But you do have a choice in how you live that thing out. And so for me, like, I didn't have a choice in a motivator. It's who I've always been. I've always wanted to motivate and inspire people. I've always wanted to impact the world. Like, even, and you're looking at a guy who hadn't really left Eastern North Carolina until I was 20 years old. But I always had a desire to impact the world and to impact people. And so the challenge is sometimes the things that's in us lie dormant. And that's called, like, untapped potential. But I always knew what was in me, so I always had a desire to share what was in me with other people. And so what you see on my Facebook page is, like, you know, I do a lot of motivational speaking. And that's just me flipping success inside out. So that's just me saying, you know what, like, God has really blessed me. He's really been good to me and has allowed me to, like, travel the world and to be successful. And, like, everything that I have experienced in this lifetime, I've experienced some level of success. And so I'd be remiss not to want to duplicate that and replicate that and share that with people. And so I'm always trying to inspire people and always trying to help people to see exactly what I see. I see what's in me, and it's my desire to get it out. And so that's what I want to do. Like, that's my charge in life. Like, it's to make sure that when people look in the mirror, that they don't see, like, defeat and resentment and despair, that they see, like, self-esteem, self-efficacy, and that they see greatness when they look in that mirror. And again, like I said, like, a tree is known by the fruit they bear. So there's no way you can tell me that one day I'm gonna leave this world, and there's no way you can tell me that with all the gifts and talents that I had that I ain't impact nobody. Or if you do tell me that, and if that is at the bottom of my obituary, then that means my living was in vain. And so I feel like we have enough people who are going to live and not have an impact. I don't want to be one of those people. So it's my duty to the world to influence. Did I answer the question?
You answered. You don't even have to say no more. Not no more. So what do you tell viewers that have the same aspiration that you have?
The viewers. Okay. To everybody out there. So first of all, when you said who have the aspiration that I have, first of all, one thing you always need to do is design your own aspirations. You know, I never once said, now don't get me wrong, like, there's coaches who I admire. You know, I admire John Wooden, the legendary UCLA coach. And, you know, I used to do a lot of his pyramid of success stuff. And I always, there's other coaches who I admire, you know, just, but I always was comfortable with becoming who I'm supposed to be. So first of all, people who are out there who have aspiration to be a coach or aspiration to mentor or to motivational speak, whatever your calling in life is, be comfortable in your own skin. Be comfortable with who you are. That's step one. And once you become comfortable with who you are, like, you got to be comfortable in your own armor. And what I mean by that is, like, life is going to throw darts at you. Life is going to throw pellets at you, bullet, metaphorically speaking, bullets at you. And you got to be able to take a hit. Because if you can't take a hit, like, you're going to waddle in the corner in your misery and whine about how life has not been good to me, and I didn't have this, I didn't have that, I didn't have a mama, didn't have a daddy, didn't have this. And so those are just excuses, you know. So be comfortable with who you are. Be comfortable in your own armor. And the last thing is, once you get your armor on, you got to be prepared to fight, because nothing comes easy in life. And so if you're willing to roll your sleeves up every day and say, you know what, like, today may not be perfect. It may not be the best day of my life, but if I have anything to do with it, it's certainly not going to be the worst day of my life, and it's not going to be the last day of my life. So that means, come what may, I'm ready to face whatever giants I got to face. And not only face the giants, but slay the giants. You know what I'm saying? Like, all David had was a slingshot, right?
Right.
He only had one gift. And here he was facing like a Philistine giant. Most people would have said, man, you can't beat no giant with a slingshot. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But he believed so much in his one gift that he was able to slay the giant. So what I'm saying is, to people listening, whatever your gifts are, whatever you have, whatever God has given you, even if it's one thing, work that one thing to the best of your ability and make it work for you. So at the end of the day, you can look yourself in the mirror and be proud of who you are, who you become, and who you've evolved into. And so, for me, I'm just a regular person that took those small things that God gave me and I used them. So when I look in the mirror, like, I'm proud of who I am. I'm proud of, like, what I'm doing. I don't compare it to anybody else. I compare it to the standards that I have for me. And so, yeah.
Wow. In my conclusion to Raw Mind Sports, he pretty much said everything I was going to say in my conclusion. An excuse.
You still
is an
say
excuse.
It.
Yeah. An excuse is an excuse. No matter what you're going through, no matter what. Your back is against the wall. Excuse me, I didn't say it right. No matter if your back is against the wall, you still find a way to persevere. Perseverance is key. You never, ever think that you don't have a chance. Excuses are excuses, no matter the situation. God put us on earth for a reason, and that's to do whatever it takes, no matter the situation. But at the end of the day, that's what it's about. No matter what it is, the obstacles, the impossible is possible.
Yeah.
The impossible is possible. With that being said, I appreciate
it. Hey, thank you, man. I appreciate it. My pleasure.
Appreciate you coming on the show. And stay tuned for for another episode. But definitely enjoy this episode right here from the Sean Jones.